Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply.
At the Home Depot, we improve things. This holiday season, we've improved Black Friday. Instead of one day of crazy, we've lowered prices now, and they'll stay low all season. From decorations to dishwashers, wreaths to ratchet sets. So sleep in. You're not going to miss Black Friday. Not one little bit. Black Friday improved. The best prices of the year already here at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. U.S. only while supplies last. See store for details.
I'm Brian Goldfinger of Goldfinger Injury Lawyers. Is your insurance company forcing you to go back to work when your doctors say you can't? If this sounds familiar, look no further than my law firm. Visit goldfingerlaw.com and get us working for you.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Reaction Podcast. I'm your host, William Liu. I'm joined on the program by Zarar. Only for the playoffs do you show up.
There's snow on the hills and a cold chill in the air, Will, but the Raptors are an all-weather team, my friend.
That's exactly right. A biblical storm had to hit the Raptors. The roof was leaking. Markieff Morris later slipped on that roof, and I did not feel sorry for him. The Toronto Raptors have broken the Game 1 curse that had lasted since 2001. The Raptors won Game 1. They took down the Washington Frauds by a score of 114 to 106 at the ACC. It was an incredible game, back and forth, tight for most of the game. But in the fourth quarter, the Raptors' defense stepped up, holding Washington 21 points. And, the offense was great. And, Zarar, did you ever think we would be led to the promised land by Baby Nagera?
You know, my dad called that one because I bought him tickets. Yeah, he did. Because I bought him tickets for the Raptors Celtics game from thefranchise.com or whatever that website is. So props to those guys. Yeah. They had great seats. And in that game, Bebe came in. You might recall, and Casey pulled the Bebe switch, and he came in and kind of not won them the game, but played pretty well. And a lot of his efforts went towards the outcome of the game. And he goes to me after, he goes, Zarar, you gotta get Bebe in the playoffs. Like, I think he's gonna be a huge factor. And I was like, old man, I don't know what you're talking about. And sure enough, here we are, and Bebe Nogueira gets, shouted out by Kyle Lowry in the post-game interview, along with DeLon Wright. Bebe was great, man. I think as soon as he came in, I think one of the first plays he made was, Morris. He altered Morris's shot, which led to a break on the other end of Miles 3. And that it wasn't a massive momentum shift, but it indicated some sort of like a transition in the game where the Raptors bench was going to maybe pull ahead. And that's kind of what happened in the fourth quarter with the DeLon Wright as well.
Man, Bebe and DeLon Wright leading the Raptors to the promised land. But you know what? We should say that Bebe had one rebound, one assist, and nothing else in 9 minutes. But
it's the presence, man.
It's the presence. It's the verticality, the length of Nagera, as Matt Devlin. Matt Devlin was on fire in this game. Did you watch the ESPN broadcast, or did you watch the local one?
I watched a bit of it. PJ Carlesimo was the announcer, and he was making a lot of good points.
Okay.
And then the feed died, and I switched over to Leo and Matt. Hey, who do you think got more FaceTime in this game, Drake or Bebe?
Drake, easily. I only saw Bebe during like live action. Whereas like the camera panned to Drake at least like 16 times hoping that he would do something cool. But, Drake was wearing the commemorative jersey for, the tragedy. So the hockey tragedy. So, I mean, good on Drake. But, let's talk about our beautiful Raptors. Early in this game, the Raptors controlled it well. The starters played both the first quarter and the third quarter really strong. This is a case where everybody on the starters was going. If anything, it was Lowry and DeRozan that wasn't, quite scoring in the first half, but, they got it on in the second half. But, this is a game where all the starters played well. Ibaka, 23 points. OG, 12 points. 9 points for JV. 11 for Lowry. 17 for DeRozan. Zarrar, which guy do you want to start with in that group?
Well, I never want to go guy by guy on this one. I thought the starters played well overall. DeRozan had a bit of a, maybe a weak first half, and he got railed on it by ESPN at halftime. But I thought overall, the issue wasn't really our offense from even the bench perspective or starter perspective. It was how easily Washington was getting their points.
Right.
I thought Washington had a lot of success on the pick and roll, both on the baseline and up top, which the Raptors struggled to defend. And give the Raptors credit, their own pick and roll was working equally well with JV rolling to the rim. I thought Washington got a lot of points through post ups, which I didn't really see coming. I thought the Raptors did well to double on that later on in the game. I think Morris got a couple of post ups scores. Scott as well was posting up and getting some success, and he was cutting on the baseline. The Raptors, I think, did well to see that in the first half, and maybe in the second half adapt a little bit better, send Nogueira for help better, Poeltl was better as well. So the offense was kind of a wash from both sides. It was just the adjustments each team made in the second half, especially the fourth quarter, which prevented that offense from being as fluid as it was in the first three quarters. So I think the focus is on defensively. And again, in a game like this, you always need like one person to kind of step up and take you all the way. And surprisingly, in this one, it was DeLon Wright, who I thought was, I mean, obviously the stats speak for themselves and the plays there as well. He was just unbelievably good in that fourth quarter and more than made up for VanVleet not being there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, I thought VanVleet's absence was felt a lot in the first half. It looked like the starters, like or the bench unit, they didn't really – the offense wasn't running as smoothly for the bench unit as it usually is. It didn't help that, you know, Dwayne Casey went to C.J. Miles – or not C.J. Miles, Norman Powell in the first half, which was a surprise. But, I mean, without VanVleet, you had to put somebody in there. Powell came in for 5 minutes, was not great, missed a wide open layup on the left hand, kind of unraveled it like a yo-yo for some reason.
He threw the ball like a baseball pitch at the backboard. I don't know what kind of attempt that was, but it was almost like he wanted to like pass it back to himself or something. It was that hard.
Yeah. And it was an open layup. Like it was contested in the sense that there was a defender there, but the left hand was completely open for that layup. Anyway, you know, Dwayne, that's a show of confidence. That's fine. You want to keep Powell, like, engaged and say, like, hey, you know, like, you got a chance. But no Powell in the second half. You know, Dwayne decides to close. And I love the decisions Dwayne Casey made in this game, not just with the surprise appearance with Bebe, because, you know, Jakob Poeltl was pretty disruptive in the first half, but he was turning the ball over a little bit, which is unusual for him in the 4-on-3 scenario. And also in the fourth quarter, he was just making a couple of mistakes in the pick and roll. So, you know, bringing in Bebe was provided more length, basically, so that the forwards, like you said, those little post-up moves that they were doing, they couldn't shoot over a guy as much as they could because Bebe's length is ridiculous. And also, the decision to play Kyle Lowry for the entire fourth quarter instead of bringing Powell in and maybe buying a couple minutes, none of that bullshit, just put in Kyle. And I thought Kyle, even though the scoring was only 11 points, him in the fourth quarter, he had that driving layup to beat the shot clock and a lot of nice little passes. He finished his game with 11 points, 9 assists, 3 rebounds, 2 steals. And I thought his defense against Bradley Beal was phenomenal. Like, Bradley Beal was nowhere to be found in the fourth quarter, as was John Wall. Nowhere to be found. Yeah.
I get all that. I think when you look at the larger, you know, the game at a high level, I thought coming into it, it was about will Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan perform, or will they kind of take a step back like they have in previous playoff matchups? And against Beal and Wall, who historically have kind of torched them, you may recall the 4-game sweep. And when you add up the totals between Wall and Beal versus Lowry and DeRozan, Wall and Beal technically won that matchup by scoring more and scoring better and playing better and being more efficient. But,
well, I don't know about more efficient. John Wall shot 6 of 20 though.
I thought he had 50 assists, man.
Like, yeah, he was good.
He was, I think, and those assists were like putting it on. They weren't like fake assists. They were, you know, putting people like right there for them. But also coming into the series, the issue with the Raptors was had the better bench, and that showed. So if you look at this game from start to finish. Yeah, the Washington backcourt scored more, maybe played better, but the Raptors bench and second unit won them the game. And that was kind of what was expected of the series, that you may lose a starting battle, but your bench is deep enough to overcome something like that. And this game, from that perspective, played out kind of predictably.
Yeah, yeah. You know what, though? One thing I will say is that we've seen it from the Raptors all season. When they do hit their threes, it does make a huge difference for what this team can do, because suddenly they are dangerous from the outside and the inside. You know, they open up a couple of driving lanes. And, yeah, the bench unit. I mean, CJ Miles hitting those four threes off the bench was really nice, because especially in the first half, I mean, he hit two kind of ridiculous threes, very deep. One was like two people flying at him. Another one was like probably 35 feet. And then in the fourth quarter, you know, Bebe kicking it out to Miles for a three. Look, the Raptors bench, I think it's not just that the bench plays well together, is that you have a lot of options off the bench. So you can do things like, you know, if Poeltl's not playing at his very best, you can bring in Bebe. Or, you know, if you need someone to, you know, fill in with the starters for a while, DeLon Wright can do that, and he can guard multiple positions, and Siakam can do his stuff. I mean, Siakam made a three. That's crazy. I mean.
And to your point, whenever they make a sub like that, they go with Poeltl or Siakam. In previous iterations of the Raptors team, they always had to sacrifice something big. Mm-hmm. It was always like, oh, do you put JV to the bench and go small and sacrifice rebounding? When they do that now, you don't sacrifice rebounding. In this game, I believe we won the rebounding battle.
Yeah, 38-35. Yeah.
And Washington only had 5 offensive rebounds, so despite all the switching, the lineup changes, there was never a stretch in the game where Washington kind of dominated the glass and had our way there. It's a luxury that you get when you have athletic bigs who can also rebound, that you can afford to make all kinds of moves without necessarily giving up the boards. And that was always a decision that you had to make in previous years. And now that decision doesn't seem to be as tough to make because you got the personnel to withstand that.
Yeah, for sure. Especially like in this game, I thought the guards did a better job of helping out and crashing the glass. I thought Serge did a really good job rebounding the ball on defense, which is not usually a strength of his, but in the occasional spot minutes where Serge Ibaka was playing five, he needs to get those rebounds, and Serge did that tonight, 12 rebounds. You know what, let's talk more about Serge. The fact that he had 23 points, I didn't see that coming, but I thought Serge was just phenomenal the whole night. I mean, he had 2 blocks as well. He got hit in the Mafuzi, but you know, he was good on the outside shot, healthy, rested. I mean, this is a big difference for him. And especially the rebounding. I'm really impressed with that rebounding from Serge. And I think, you know, in this series, if Valanciunas isn't able to defend as much as he can, because it is a really tough ask for him to guard a pick and roll involving Wall and Beal and you know, someone either like Markieff Morris who can pop and hit a three, and he did that today, or even Gortat, who has sort of traditionally played JV really, really well, you're going to need Ibaka to play some five. And I thought Ibaka today, I mean, he did everything you wanted from him on both ends. He was probably, you know, maybe he doesn't even get a top three star, but he was one of the most impactful players.
And a quiet 23.
Yeah.
When I saw the stat line after, I was like, whoa, 23 on 8 of 11 shooting? I did, because all you remember from Ibaka is like him fumbling the ball a couple times, and his scoring is almost lost in the mix of all the other things he did. But to me, more impressive than his 23 points is his rebounding.
Yeah.
I thought, especially with JB in there in the first quarter, I think we dominated the glass. I think we had 8 of the first 9 rebounds that were out there. Yeah, Ibaka's he's a smart player, man. You can just count on him to not do dumb things, right? He's not gonna make, like, other than taking maybe a step back jumper once in a while.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, he is a very reliable and predictable player in terms of what he's going to do. Like, he's gonna get you rebounds. He's gonna pass the ball when he needs to. He's not gonna force things up.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best things I like about Ibaka is that when he gets an offensive rebound or a rebound, he knows what to do with the pass.
Yeah.
Like, he'll never turn the ball over or do anything stupid after he gets the rebound. Like, he'll take his time, he'll let the opposition go the other way and then pass it out. It's a small thing, but it's just important for the guy who secures the rebound to do that. Him and JV are both pretty good at it.
Yeah, yeah.
And with those two in there, man, you just feel kind of confident that you're not really losing too much on the quickness side, because Morris is a nimble player, but he's not, you know, he's not going to blow you away. The only issue with Ibaka and Valanciunas in there is that when they come out to defend Beal and Wall in their pick and roll sequences, they just have a little trouble getting back, and the Raptors almost always need to provide some sort of secondary help there. You cannot rely on, especially Valanciunas, to get back. And I think that's a lesson learned from this game, which you take into game two.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. One other thing. It was very surprising to me. I mean, not surprising necessarily, because we know he's capable of it, but to see OG come off the bench, or not off the bench, but, you know, for him to make his debut and to not look shook one bit at all. I thought defensively he was pretty solid. The Raptors actually made a switch to put OG on John Wall and move Lowry to Beal. They sort of switched those two matchups there. And it wasn't necessarily that Beal was doing such a good job, like, offensively. He was killing, you know, OG or anything like that. But it was just putting a little bit more length, going under the screens, which is what they should do against Wall. And then contesting, he was great on defense. And then on offense, wasn't afraid to shoot. 4 threes in 22 minutes. You know, hit two of them. And also made some great backdoor cuts. Like we've seen when, you know, Washington is going to double the ball handler. We've seen it happen time and time again. They did it today again against DeRozan and Lowry. And DeRozan and Lowry make the right passes a lot of the time. And, you know, part of that is on Lowry and DeRozan to make the pass. The other half is that someone needs to come and be open. And for OG to make those reads and come from the weak side to, like, flash and get into the dunker spot, make himself open, the pass can go to OG, OG can finish. You know, Ibaka was doing that too, JB a little bit as well. That's the exact kind of offense that, you know, this is why the Raptors changed their offense, because they knew that teams are going to trap Lowry and DeRozan in the playoffs, and they need to provide. And this is a clear example where you got Lowry and DeRozan, 15 assists, and then you have a whole bunch of other players scoring the basketball and providing around them. And, you know, look, obviously a night where the Raptors shoot 16 to 30 from deep, that's going to be, you're going to see great results. But ultimately, that's the formula that, that the Raptors have been working on all season. And it was nice to see that translate into the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think good decisions all around. I remember when Washington's big picked up their second foul, Gortat picked up his second foul, and they got in Morris at the five, kind of went small. And the first thing Lowry did is he had a chance to take a jumper, but he kind of hesitated his way and scored against Morris, like, within 5 seconds of him being playing center.
Right.
Your examples of OG are bang on. The guy has always been a good cutter, baseline especially, and he continued that. The threes he took were not like him kind of proving himself. They were just within the rhythm of the offense. They came to him, and he just did not hesitate. You're absolutely right. A lot of times a rookie might look away or be gun shy a little bit, and he's totally not that. So, but to temper all that with, we won 114-106. If John Wall had gotten hot in the last 3 minutes,
which he never does, he's apparently one of the worst clutch players by stats of the season. I mean, obviously he's capable, but, you know.
Yeah, he's also been injured, obviously, so that goes something in it. But so heading into game two, this easily, if Wall had gone off for the last 3-4 minutes, could have been an L. But what do you, as you look forward to game two, you can't count on Miles hitting, like, you know, three massive threes maybe again, or as you said, 16 for 30 from 3-point line. But one thing you can count on is the Raptors to be aggressive going into the paint, which is what they did in this game. I think the percentages will normalize, as they always do. But as long as they stay aggressive, do smart things, control the glass, and defend the pick and roll better, I think this can be a very manageable series for the Raptors.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing, right? If we shut down, Washington is not going to run a complicated play set, right? Like, they have two plays. Well, they have three plays, really. One is to just get Bradley Beal open off the ball. He comes around a couple of screens, goes from one side, you know, cuts to the baseline, cuts around two screens, and maybe he decides to go back one way or the other. As long as you stick with him through that and you communicate, you should be able to deny that, because he's not such a big guard or that dominant where he should get open. Then you have the pick and roll with John Wall and Bradley Beal, and I thought the Raptors, you know, defensively, second half, really figured out the John Wall pick and roll. You know, sag back. Stay home on your shooters. That's still an issue for the Raptors. They got to really stay home on the shooters. They're very eager to help. But as much as you can keep the John Wall thing to a two-man game, you're good. And provide help with the rim. Because if he shoots a jumper, it's not that big of a deal. I know he hit three threes today, but it really is not that big of a deal. And then just provide help with the rim. Because I don't think John Wall has the complete explosiveness that you would normally see out of John Wall. Mm-hmm. Right? And I think where that was clear today was John Wall today shot 3 of 13 at the rim. This is a very athletic guard, and his bread and butter is getting to the rim, putting pressure there, and when you collapse, he kicks it out. If he's shooting 3 of 13 at the rim, then it's a different ball game. He still had 15 assists, so that's a true mark of a star right there. But, you know,
I still worry about Wall because that 3 of 13 could have easily been 7 of 13. Sure. Some of those were, you know, some of those maybe you could argue were fouls. At least he would argue that way. But I think
he got some calls too, though. It wasn't shortchanged in this.
Yeah, no. I'm not suggesting that at all. Yeah. I think a third play that they may use going for the rest of the series is the post up option with Morris. I think if we put Ibaka on him, we're in a decent position. But if we put a smaller guy on him or somebody who's you know, maybe not as experienced, Morris probably can get something out of that play. So look for Washington to kind of milk that a little bit more. And also, Scotty Brooks was asked pregame or a couple of days ago on who's the one player that takes you from being an average team to somebody who can beat anybody. And his response was Markieff Morris. Like, he's their X factor. Like, yeah. They look to get him off big time. And I expect, given his 9-for-15 performance today, 22 points, I think Washington's looking at that and going, we may have something here. So I expect him to be a more focused part of the offense going forward as well.
Yeah, for sure. And look, Washington did go small with Morris. I think that's a bit dangerous, but I think Toronto responded correctly to that. When it's small, there's no shot blocking at all. Go towards the rim. And I think that's why, despite the fact that he had, you know, 22 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists, probably their best player tonight, but he was still a minus 12 because a lot of those minutes, the Raptors just went straight to the rim and scored on him.
Yeah. Zero block shots. I mean, he's not a shot blocker.
Yeah. All right, Zohar, let's do our three stars. Who's the first star tonight?
The first star, man, Ibaka's numbers look great, but I just felt impact-wise, DeLon Wright, man. DeLon. I think he had some huge threes, some good defensive plays in that fourth, and, you know, he took on the role of the star in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, for sure. Especially that three-point shot. I mean, the thing with DeLon is he'll never be aggressive with the three-point shot, but he has hit the three-point shot consistently from November onward. He's been like a 38% shooter, and I'm not saying he's gonna pull up off the dribble or anything, but he can hit that shot when he's open, and they're gonna leave him open, and he's gotta shoot that three, and he was great at it tonight. I agree with you, first star. Second star, moving to Ibaka. 23 points, 12 rebounds, like we mentioned earlier, 8 of 11 shooting, 3 of 4 from deep, 2 blocks. You know, good job. And then third star, who you got for third star?
Well, third, you may, so the candidates here are, I'd say, DeRozan, because the start of that third quarter, right. I think he single-handedly took us from down 5 to up 5. I think he had a couple of threes and just took over the game the way he sometimes does. So that's a strong candidate. But also CJ Miles, man. Him and DeLon had some good sequences in the fourth. He had 2 big threes in the second quarter, I think. It's between those two. I'll let you pick, because if I pick CJ Miles, people say, oh, you're a DeRozan hater. I'm like, no, I'm not. So you go ahead and pick.
Okay. I'm going to go with DeRozan. And the reason for that is not necessarily because he had that scoring binge in the third quarter, although, it was nice to see for sure, because he only had, I think, one basket in transition in the first half. I just like the fact that DeRozan didn't abandon the offense. And it's very important for your leaders to stick to what's working, what got you there. And DeMar has said all season, you know, like, yeah, we changed the offense. We know what's going to work. We're not going to revert. And that the one player that's you would think is most likely to revert when things get tough, and there were a lot of tough moments in this game, was DeMar, right? You would think he might say, you know what, I'm going to take this team on my back. I'm going to start shooting some mid-range jumpers and, you know, whatever. We'll see what happens, right? At no point did DeMar do that. He always facilitated the offense. And the fact that he only got 6 assists, I think kind of undersells how willing he was to pass the ball, because, you know, he was very good at finding the open man. They were trapping, and DeMar was making the right pass. And when you have that kind of leadership from your star player, I think it empowers the rest of the guys. So I'm giving it to DeMar. CJ was nice for sure. 12 points, I mean, including some key threes in the fourth, but, yeah, DeMar, I really liked the way he played this game, especially in the second half.
Yeah, and honestly, I do not expect him to revert to that, because this is his fifth playoffs at this point.
That's true.
I mean, the Raptors have kind of bled their way through the last 4 years, and they understand what it takes to win in the playoffs, and I think DeRozan understands what he should not be doing, so I don't expect him to, like, go off on a, you know, 0-for-8 jump shooting spree, taking contested shots anymore. I think he's beyond that. He had a smart game, man. I think overall, I can't point to any Raptor and say, like, they didn't play well. And DeRozan was totally fine. And I don't share the same fears that you do. Hey, did you feel that, the refs were a bit, a bit touchy-feely in this game, man. Because some of those offensive fouls that they called were... Yeah, a couple of them are moving screens, but a lot of makeup calls. I don't know what was going on with the offensive foul against Lowry on the moving screen. Mm-hmm. I know that Washington moved on every other screen, and you could have called that very easily, especially Gortat. And credit to Dwayne Casey all week or the last 2-3 days talking about Gortat being a little too aggressive and the ref should watch him. And I think that actually paid off a little.
Yeah, no, for sure. Look. Gortat was in foul trouble like 3 minutes into the game, and then Yamahimini came off the bench and picked up 2 fouls in 3 minutes, and then Yamahimini was nowhere to be found the rest of the game.
Yeah, he's like their Norman Powell.
Yeah. Except this Norman Powell makes 16, not 11 million. So it's even worse. And has no upside. But, look, you could definitely call a lot of these fouls for sure. I thought, you know, in the fourth quarter, they were a little bit more loose with it, depending on sort of which way they, I don't know. I thought Washington got a couple calls down the stretch. There was the missed call on Marcin Gortat where, DeMar or Lowry was driving to the rim, and Gortat clearly grabbed the mesh and disrupted the net, and somehow they didn't call that. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking, what are you watching? If you're not watching the action where the ball is, what are you doing, right? So, I don't know. The officiating is going to be what it is. I like the fact that the Raptors didn't get sucked up in the officiating. You know, didn't see DeMar, like, complaining to the refs or whatever. In fact, most of the game, you saw most of the game was Washington talking to refs. John Wall talking to refs every single time. And even
our old nemesis Tony Brothers was, calling the game.
Yep.
You know, with his, forehead thing going on.
Scrunchy face. Yeah, he looks like a pug.
Yeah. Here, Tony.
Okay.
It's good to be alive, Will. 1-0 up in the playoffs.
That's what Vegas says to him.
I was watching the ESPN feed at the start, and they were talking about, the Raptors talking about how they're going to approach game one as a game seven.
I didn't like that. I didn't like
that. That was a weird quote by whoever said it.
That was Kyle Lowry.
Well, we're going to approach game one as a game. And then I think Jalen Rose or Chauncey Billups, I think, made the point that, well, if you're saying that out loud, then Washington's thinking, you know, if they call this game seven, all we have to do is win game one and we'll win the series. So they were like extrapolating that thought to a whole new level, to the point where the host had to come in and go, guys, it's time for the game that they fix the leak.
Yeah. Personally, I didn't like that quote. I like what DeRozan said, which was, I only think about it when you guys bring it up. Cause that's really the only reason you should think about it, right? It's like, it's an interest point for people to read about and be like, oh, huh, the Raptors, you know, they really suck in game one. I don't want to hear it from the players, but look, all credit to Lowry at least for backing it up, because I thought he was phenomenal in the fourth quarter. His defense on Wall and Beal was really nice, and they got the win, man. Shit, Zarrar. You saw the last time the Raptors won game. What do you remember the last time the Raptors won game one, which was against the Sixers? 2001. Do you remember anything from that?
It was on the road. It was on the road. Okay. And it was in Philly. And, it was the Iverson team. I don't remember anything. I just remember Vince Carter having a decent game.
Okay.
And then us actually having a chance. What I remember about the Philly part of that series is obviously the game seven, miss. But in game two, we had a chance to win that game.
Okay.
Like, we should have been up 2-0 coming back to Toronto that year, and that's what I remember. Who gives a shit about what happened like in 2000? Fuck, who cares, man? It's game one.
I don't know, man. Zora, you know, every time you come on this podcast, I ask you about history and stuff.
Yeah.
You're not even that old.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm really not that old.
All right.
Hey, one more point of interest.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think? Like, Washington changes heading into game two. Like, do you think they look at this game and they go, hey, you know, man, we should have had that but for this. Like, what's there but for this after game one?
I think John Wall might complain about a couple calls because he did really throw his hands up a lot. And there were a couple of bang-bang plays where, you know, especially one where Lowry went vertical. Although I think that's just what Lowry does. Like, we've seen it all season. Lowry goes vertical on a drive. Someone goes to the rim. You know, the Raptors get the ball and get the stop. But I think there isn't necessarily one play they go back and look at and say, oh, man, that was a big shot. If only we made that big shot. I think Washington on the stretch, they really didn't have anything creative. What I really noticed is that John Wall really monopolized the ball in the fourth quarter, whereas Bradley Beal didn't touch it as much. Like, yeah. Throughout most of the game, they'll run Bradley Beal away from the ball. It's kind of an issue for the Raptors. They'll even give Bradley Beal the ball. Bradley Beal's very willing to pass to Gortat. Late in the game, it's just John Wall gets a screen from Gortat or Morris, depending on what kind of play he wants, a pop or a screen, a roll, and then, you know, it's just, Washington's a little bit predictable down the stretch, so I don't really think there's one specific play. I think if there's one turning point for the Raptors, it was probably Mike Scott tackling Kyle Lowry for no good reason, really. Yeah. And getting a flagrant one, the Raptors had like a 4-point play on that sequence, and then Bebe came in and, you know, the Raptors did really well, but, I don't know. I don't think Washington had a specific thing. Maybe they go back on the tape and they try to play small a little bit more, but that's not necessarily a great option against the Raptors.
Yeah. I think Scotty Brooks' offense is what it was in Oklahoma, very simplistic, except he doesn't have Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, yeah. He does have Markieff Morris, who are you going to give the Gerald Henderson Award tonight? Because
I was thinking about that.
Yeah.
I think it has to be Scott, right?
It has to be Scott. Yeah, I think Morris is capable of these games. It's just he's not going to do it every single night.
Yeah, and he's a starter, and he's good enough not to be part of the Gerald Henderson discussion.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
Yeah, look, Mike Scott, 14 points off the bench, 7 of 10 shooting, plus 6, made a ton of difficult shots, but also a couple of plays where, you know, JV and Ibaka miscommunicated, and Mike Scott got free for 2 dunks. So, I don't know. Mike Scott, he's a good mid-range shooter. He's very accurate from there, like 56%, which is...
Yeah, he's kind of like Gerald Henderson.
He's Gerald Henderson. Yep, that's the guy. A 3-4 type that's torching the Raptors and the Wizards? Never seen that one before. All right, Zora.
All right. Good stuff.
How do you feel? Do you feel good? Do you feel confident?
Well, I think I called this series in 5 this time.
In 5?
Yeah,
I thought
you said
your heart said 5 and your head
mind
said 7.
But I think I listened to the heart on the 5 because I just think that, again, down the stretch, Washington is like the Raptors 5 years ago when they had no idea how to handle pressure in the fourth. And they just took the first available shot, which their star decided was a good shot. And that's it. They don't have any team cohesion the way the Raptors do right now. And I think that the Raptors are just deeper and better at pretty much everywhere here. The only way Washington pulls the series is if Wall and Beal just explode and Lowry and DeRozan recess into something really bad. And I just don't see that happening.
Honestly, I think I picked Raptors in 6 mostly because I feel like the 3-point shooting was going to be a little bit inconsistent. And look, the Raptors could have easily gone 13 of 30 tonight instead of 16 of 30. 13 of 30 is more close to their season average. And, you know, who knows? It's a different game. But at the same time, there were a lot of those sequences. Like you said, Zora, man, that continuity that the Raptors have. There was that one sequence in the fourth quarter where the Raptors drove and kicked it like 4 times, and then DeLon Wright finally got open for 3 and shot it. They turned down like 2 or 3 good looks that if it was Washington, they would have definitely taken those shots already. But the Raptors were patient. They moved it around. They showed trust in each other, and they made the shots. So.
Did Washington even have one play to anything that came close to that?
No.
In this entire... No.
And they had
not.
29 assists, but they were very basic, like pick and roll, kick out, shoot. Not pick and roll, kick out, pump fake, drive, pass to the next guy, maybe another quick pass, another drive, kick out, shoot, wide open. Nothing like that.
Yeah.
So. All right. We might be too confident, but what the hell?
Hey, man, it's time to be confident.
We won 59 games.
If you're not going to be confident with being the number one seed in the East, when the hell are you going to be confident?
Exactly. We're going all the way, Zerai. We're going all the way, all right?
Well, all the way to the second round.
Let's
not think about that right now.
We'll see. Indiana, please, please win against Cleveland for once in your life. That's not going to happen.
It's Agent Corey Joseph, man. He's there for us.
Corey, if you could just somehow trip LeBron or something, it'd be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, imagine if he does that and takes off his Pacers jersey to reveal like a Raptors number 6.
I would love it. I would love it. As much as LeBron makes money for the entire league, I would love it if he did something like that for us.
All right,
Zora, let's come back for game 2.
Regina King for Cadillac Escalade.
When people ask, Regina, do you like to compete? I say, bring it on. Those are the moments that drive you to achieve more. And when you win, you keep reaching higher. To me, that's what the Cadillac Escalade represents. It's always evolving in technology, in design, everything. Because success isn't the end. It's just the first step to what comes next.
The 2021 Cadillac Escalade. Never stop arriving. Regina King for Cadillac Escalade.
When people ask, Regina, do you like to compete? I say, bring it on. Those are the moments that drive you to achieve more. And when you win, you keep reaching higher. To me, that's what the Cadillac Escalade represents. It's always evolving in technology, in design, everything. Because success isn't the end. It's just the first step to what comes next.
The 2021 Cadillac Escalade. Never stop arriving.